Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Every day we hear about the human toll of COVID-19, but as we just heard in our conversation with Illinois Comptroller Susana Mendoza, the novel coronavirus is also doing significant damage to the state's finances. Officials have been unable or unwilling to say just how bad the losses in sales and income tax have been, so a group of experts made their own assessment of the damage, or at least the range of possibilities of damage, which seem to span from bad to worse. The report is from the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. We're joined by one of the co-authors, Amanda Cass. She's Associate Director of the Government Finance Research Center at the University of Illinois at Chicago. And also with us is the new director of the Institute, Robin Fretwell Wilson. Robin, Amanda, welcome back to the 21st.
Well, thanks for having us.
Robin, I wanted to begin with you, just sort of a big picture here. What is the Institute of Government and Public Affairs trying to bring to the conversation in Illinois here? What are the big picture questions you're trying to answer as everyone is adapting to this new pandemic reality we find ourselves in?
Well, I think that is a really important question because we've seen such a shift, dramatic shift in our lives, as we say, and something that we were preparing for release in the coming weeks. You know, there's almost no one alive in America, unless they lived through the Great Depression, that have had any kind of experience with this kind of shift and dramatic change in our lives. What we're trying to bring to the table is really to marshal the talents of the faculty across the three University of Illinois system universities and bring it to bear on making people's lives better and, you know, helping people who were fragile coming in to the pandemic to be able to emerge as unscathed as possible. And essentially, President Colleen asked IGPA to assemble a task force. We, at last count, had 55 faculty across the three universities, all pulling together, including amazing people like Amanda. So it's been a real privilege to get to work with them. And they are preparing impact reports in three domains. One is the one that Amanda will be talking about, economic and fiscal impacts. A second is on the impact on our healthcare workforce, which is effectively, you know, our frontline responders in this crisis for all of us. And so we have to think about how do we take care of them. And then the third is really one that I'm very passionate about, which is vulnerability. So many people are vulnerable either to the virus or they're vulnerable to the economic fallout from the way we're managing this. Or they have the double whammy, Brian, so that they actually have overlapping vulnerabilities that make them especially, I think, important in the way that we think about how we're managing this, because we need to do right by everyone, but especially those who have the least.
So the first report that came out is the one on the economic and fiscal effects on Illinois. So, Amanda, you were one of the co-authors of that report. I wanted to begin by asking you, what is your baseline? How were Illinois government finances doing before the COVID-19 pandemic?
Sure, I think, and that's a kind of great place to start. You know, some important context, I think, is that the state's finances were doing okay. I think the state was starting to right its fiscal ship. People should keep in mind that the state had fairly recently gone through the period where there was the budget impasse and we had no budget, and we built up a substantial backlog of unpaid bills that accrued interest, and there was a lot of damage done to various parts of the state budget, especially human services. So I think, you know, the state was starting to dig itself out of that and starting to get on solid fiscal footing. And then we had the COVID-19 pandemic occur.
So I wonder, as you're looking at putting together this report, you and your co-authors, there's so much bad economic news out there, to say nothing of the terrible health news as well, that I think it's hard for people to get a grip on it. So how do you begin to quantify it? What numbers do you focus on? How do you do this analysis?
Sure. And I think that's a really good point, is that there's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of, I think, different forecasting going on and different scenarios about how severe the economic downturn is going to be and how long it's going to last. And all of that will impact the state's finances. So one thing is that we approach this knowing that there's a lot of moving parts still, and we really don't have perfect information to be able to accurately forecast exactly what's going to happen to the state's finances. And so what we did is we looked at kind of several different scenarios, ranging from kind of a more moderate economic impact to kind of the most severe economic impact, and focusing on how are those different scenarios going to impact the state's three biggest sources of revenue, which are the personal and corporate income tax and the state sales tax. Combined, those three taxes account for almost half of the state's total revenue. So we really just focused on looking at those three under a range of different scenarios and seeing how might the revenue, what might the revenue shortfalls be to those three.
And so what are the range of possibilities? I mean, what's best case to worst case scenarios there?
So when we were looking at it, kind of the low severity and having a kind of quick recovery, we modeled out that that might be a loss of about $4 billion. And then the very kind of high range was the most severe pandemic and having a very protracted downturn and weak recovery, meaning that it lasts for several years. And in that scenario, we estimated that it might be result in over $28 billion in lost revenue. But I think, you know, the thing that's important for people to keep in mind is these are just estimates, and they're estimates with imperfect information.
Can you put that in context? What would a $4 billion best case scenario revenue hit? I mean, I think those are big numbers. People don't necessarily have a concept of what that means. What does $4 billion get you when you're trying to run a state government?
Right. So we can talk just looking at, so this the state's budget is comprised of lots of different funds. People generally talk about it in terms of the general fund because that's the most, that's kind of the biggest catch-all, and it's where a lot of the discretion is for lawmakers. So the general fund for 2019, to provide some context, was about $40 billion. So you can think, you know, what a $4 billion hole means for a $40 billion budget. The one thing to keep in mind with our estimates is that kind of the biggest financial impact from the most severe pandemic, that's a loss over a couple of years. So it's not, we weren't estimating that the state would lose $28 billion in 1 year.
Okay. Well, that's, I guess, something of a relief. One of the ways I often think about this is that the Illinois prison system, I think the annual budget, and I might be a couple of years old on this, but it's about $1.5 billion. So, I mean, if you think that that's what it costs to run the state prisons, every prison guard's salary, every meal, every, you know, television or gym equipment or whatever that goes into running the prisons is $1.5 billion. And you're talking about, in a best case scenario, well more than double that. So this is, I mean, this would be a significant loss.
Yep, it's a significant loss. Another area of the budget that listeners will probably be familiar with is education. So the pre-K through 12 education is about $8 billion. You know, so they want to kind of think about it in that way too. Potentially, you know, we're talking about a chunk of money that's what the state provides for pre-K through 12 education each year.
We talked about what the potential revenue losses are for the state, but there's also this question of increased spending. And earlier in the program, we spoke with Controller Susana Mendoza, who says Illinois has already spent an unexpected $174 million. And that's just on buying personal protective equipment during the pandemic. Doesn't account for increased medical costs for people in state health programs or labor costs for overtime at the Department of Public Health or Department of Employment Security, other expenses. Do you have a sense of how much extra money Illinois might have to spend to deal with COVID-19?
I think, you know, it's a really good issue to raise because the pandemic is impacting revenue and creating this shortfall. in collections. At the same time, it's creating a demand for more state services and a great need for it. So in our report, we looked at just kind of three areas of the state budget: public health spending, Medicaid, and human services. And we had some kind of different scenarios in it. We didn't have the same kind of estimates that we did for revenue losses. But one thing that we looked at with Medicaid is we looked at how did Medicaid spending change in the last recession, in the 2007-2009 recession. And we found that during that period, Medicaid spending increased by more than 20%. Right. So if we want to think about Medicaid, which again is just one aspect of the state budget, potentially we're going to see spending increasing by 20% or more.
That's huge, right? I mean, that is a huge amount of money.
It's a substantial amount of money, especially when we're talking about it in the context of this other fiscal pressure of very sharp and significant revenue decline.
Your report also looked at the state pension systems. How healthy were the state pension systems? And I'm sort of holding back a laugh as I ask you this question, but how healthy were the state pensions heading into the pandemic?
Yeah, I feel a little bit like I'm just bringing doomsday news to your listeners, but the state pension systems were significantly underfunded. Illinois kind of frequently gets headlines about how underfunded its pension systems were. So collectively, the five state pension systems were about 40% funded going into this COVID-19 pandemic. So that means that for every $1 in a pension benefit liability, the state has 40 cents in the bank right now. One thing that's important to keep in mind, though, is that those benefits don't all get paid out at once. It's benefits for people that are currently retired, but also people that aren't going to be retiring for another, 10, 20, 30 years. But that being said, the systems were significantly underfunded, and the state's annual payments into the pension systems are a function of their funding level, meaning that the worst funded the pension systems are, the higher the state contributions are going to be.
And we have experience with a major economic downturn from the Great Recession 10 years ago, right? Do we have a sense of whether this will be better or worse than it was back then?
It's a little hard to know because, I think we're still in the kind of economic shock or downturn of the COVID-19 pandemic, and we don't know what the recovery will look like. But part of the problem for Illinois is that the pension system's financial condition did decrease significantly in the wake of the last recession, and it really never recovered. So the pension systems prior to the Great Recession were at about 62% funded, and they dropped down to a low of 39% funded. And they've really just hovered at around 40% funded since that low. So even though the Great Recession was 10 years ago, the state pension systems really haven't seen any financial improvement since the loss in assets that happened from that event.
Well, this is sort of doomsday news, isn't it? Or it doesn't feel like there's a whole lot of positive news to come out of this aspect of this analysis. Robin Fretwell-Wilson, I want to bring you back into the conversation. You are the new director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. From a sort of big picture standpoint, I wonder what concerns you most about the pandemic from a state policy standpoint?
Well, the doomsday place is probably the right place to start, which is I think that the entire unfolding of this has been really difficult for real people's lives in ways that I think have been almost not counted, not able to be counted, because we're so focused on managing a crisis as it unfolds that I think we haven't paused to ask people how those impacts are playing out in their lives. Now, we do that. I mean, good reporting like yours, Brian, does exactly that. But we haven't done it systematically. And I think that's a very important role for IGPA to be playing. We have terrific researchers who have been doing community-engaged research as long as I've been a law professor. That's where I came to this from. And, they're so tapped into vulnerable communities that I think they can add a lot of perspective for us about what it means to be managing this crisis in the way that we are. So for example, in my own work as a law faculty member, I've been very concerned about, you know, the kinds of risks that children experience in families, right? Of physical abuse and sexual abuse, emotional abuse. And one thing that, you know, has been reported widely, but we haven't really ferreted out, is the fact that child abuse and neglect reports in the state have plummeted. And it kind of makes sense of that for a second. We know that the risk factors for things like child physical abuse are things like financial strain, isolation, you know, not necessarily being able to be seen outside of the home so that, you know, our neighbors, our communities can't act as monitors. I mean, this is a perfect storm for children to be suffering right now, or to be sort of hit with. And we've got to pay attention to that. And that's one thing that I think IGPA, along with the fiscal picture that it's been painting with Amanda in the interview today, along with the work that it's doing on the healthcare workforce and how do we protect them, and we owe that to them because they're doing so much for us. But how do we take care of those folks where we reliably, predictably can say, hey, you know, we're worried that something may be happening, that we don't have our normal tools in the toolkit to use. You know, so when kids go to school, Brian, their teachers see them. You know, where about half the reports for child abuse and neglect come nationally? From teachers. And yet we move to Zoom, right? Or some people don't even have the ability to get on the internet for their children to be doing work from home. So who's watching? Who's paying attention to what's happening to those kids? That's a place where IGPA can add value.
Robin Fretwell-Wilson is director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. We also spoke with Amanda Cass. She's an affiliate of the Institute and also associate director of the Government Finance Research Center at the University of Illinois at Chicago. Robin and Amanda, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thank you.
Coming up after the break, even though the stay-at-home order has shut down many businesses, it doesn't stop our need for the services they provide. We'll talk with hairstylists and a salon owner about how they're trying to navigate the crisis for themselves and their clients. Just ahead on the 21st, stay with us.